This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yes, good to be together. You have a pick of various vision topics these 2 days. Noticed Kevin was in here the last session on unified vision. I think Claire has it on maintaining vision. And so this is very different than either one of those two. This topic is on birthing vision. And so glad you're here. I noticed the crowd's pretty young. New visions attract young men. That's fitting. And glad for young and old alike. Got a personal question. How many of you are called or even view yourself as a visionary? Think about that a little bit. Maybe people refer to you as a visionary, or you see yourself as one, or that one of your top characteristics is vision. And don't be bashful here. I mean, you can admit your sin here. Most people don't like visionaries, so okay, we got a couple of visionaries. Well, the right people are in the room here. What do you think the difference is between a visionary and an entrepreneur? Now, these terms are used loosely, so I'm looking for the nuances here. I want you to think about the difference between a visionary in kind of the classic sense and an entrepreneur. You typically don't need any more than one visionary in an organization. In the early days of Anabaptist Financial, Richie and I worked together very closely. And couple years into it, one of his buddies came to me and he said, you know what Richie says about you? I said, no. He said, you're the gas pedal and he's the brake. And the two of you get along if you let off when he applies the brake. I don't know if any of you young guys know what power braking is, you know, when you apply both. The pedal and the brake creates smoke. Richie and I had a lot of fun founding Anabaptist Financial 15 years ago. Every visionary tends to need those that put the brakes on him and help sometimes clean up the messes that he creates. Be careful what you give birth to. It may live a short, miserable life. That's a positive way to start the session here, isn't it? Well, the difference, I asked a question, what's the difference between a visionary and an entrepreneur? An entrepreneur is capable of starting things, creating things, making something happen. Often referred to in a business context, but think of it in a nonprofit as well. They can create initial momentum. Think of the 9/11 terrorist attack in the Flight 93. And Todd Beamer is known for saying what?
Let's roll.
Let's roll. Instant action. That wasn't any long-term vision, very short. And that's what entrepreneurs make things happen. Or on the other hand, a visionary is someone who's able to imagine end results and see something that doesn't exist. Think of Martin Luther King. I have a dream. You probably read his speech. And he was wanting to bring the end to racism. But when you bring together the entrepreneur and the visionary, and you get the person that can see where this thing's going to head, that's not even born yet, and at the same time have the capacity to do the first things that need done, you got a powerful mix. And I'm using vision in that sense. The visionary is dangerous who's only entrepreneur, and he really can't see where he's going, but you know what? I think this will work. And he charges off, and like they say, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. But you get... Great vision is typically launched when you have the long view in sight, and also the first steps clearly defined.
Well, we're going to attempt to weave those two twin capacities of envisioning an end result and seizing the opportunity right in front of it. Rarely do these two traits show up in the same person. And that's by design. God creates us with different gifts. And birthing vision often takes a team. Our topic here is birthing vision, but vision rarely starts out of a vacuum. Before pain, before vision, comes pain. Before any significant vision, one needs to experience pain and identify pain and sit with the problem that you're really trying to solve. 1940s, there was a man named George that was frustrated with needing to pull burrs off his pants leg every time he came in from a walk with his dog. And one day he noticed all these little fingers on these burrs that he pulled off his pants leg. And he got the vision to create Velcro. The best visions are born out of pain. Before the era of computers, a secretary was frustrated by making typing mistakes on executive documents, particularly near the end of the document. In desperation, she mixed flour with nail polish and discovered what we now know, or maybe we don't know anymore, it's not needed, liquid paper, and sold it to Gillette for $47 million. Just trying to deal with the pain of life. Best visions are anchored in pain. It's often a precursor because it grabs our attention, pain is, and it's a messenger to scream there's a problem that needs solved. Something's wrong. Something isn't working. You want to birth vision, pay attention to the pain in your life. What's wrong with the world? But be careful. Don't get distracted with pain, because pain itself is rarely the problem to be solved. Has pain ever killed anyone?
No.
No. But it points to a problem. If you can get your arms around what that problem is, possibly a vision is about to be born. Let it shake you. Andy Stanley, in his book Visioneering, said it this way: vision evokes emotion. And in the early stages of a vision emerging, it's often the emotion of pain and suffering. In 2003, if I can just share a story here, 2003, Anabaptist Financial wasn't on anybody's mind, and it certainly wasn't on mine. I was working for Faith Builders at the time, promoting the educational tax credit that just got approved in 2002, and those of you that know part of Faith Builders ministry and the Pennsylvania tax opportunity of businesses can funnel taxes to the Pennsylvania schools. And I think today it funnels something like $3-4 million. And anyhow, that legislation had just passed, and I was promoting it in Lancaster. And spent 3 months actually down there getting familiar with Lancaster and business, and we were tending to target the larger businesses. Sole proprietors didn't apply to them. And in particularly one businessman, Leonard Martin from the Lebanon area, Evergreen Enterprises, he was a developer, shared with him the tax credit, and he was interested and excited about it, and got to know him there. And when we were all done, he said, you know what? He said, can I complain a little bit? He said, you know, the nonprofits are great. I support them. I love them. But he said, business is hard. And I feel pretty alone. I feel at the edge of the church. Where's the support for the businessman? Why is everybody excited about the ministries, but not the businesses? He didn't know he was talking to somebody that had turned my back on business. Oh, yeah, we need business, but I was onto the exciting thing of nonprofits. Well, that evening, as I flew my little airplane up across Pennsylvania from Lancaster Airport to Titusville, climbed up to about 8,000 feet and put it on cruise, and I was thinking about what Leonard said. And I was wondering if he's the only one that feels that way. It's just a lack of support for the businessmen. And then the thought came to me, I wonder if something could be done about that. You see, if you listened to the pain of the world, you just might be about to burst something. I want to cover three thoughts here. Excavate the problem, innovate the solution, and orchestrate the people. Simple, but not easy. Particularly when vision doesn't exist. When we're birthing vision, you're creating something. It's very different than maintaining. Excavate, innovate, and orchestrate. Well, first of all, I suggest that pain will actually lead you to the problem. Don't get distracted by the pain, but actually go to the problem. Real pain, real vision, is driven by real need. Plato said, necessity is the mother of invention. Necessity, not preference, not little things that aren't really classified as necessity. He says necessity is the mother of invention. Sometimes our visions are never birthed because the need behind the vision isn't big enough. What you think is important, especially in the nonprofit world, may be too small to build a vision that others will embrace. Or maybe the need is big enough, but you only understand the surface of the need. And people just don't get it. They don't think it's worth the vision. Seek first to understand the problem that you're trying to solve. Those of you that are married, do you ever get in trouble with your wife when, you know, she's talking about this problem and, yeah. And man, I like fixing things, and you know, and she says, stop trying to fix it. You don't understand yet. You can't birth vision if you do not understand. Seek first to understand, Covey says, in relationships. I want to apply it here. Seek first to understand the root problem. You got to do some excavating. If you're going to birth a vision, a credible vision, you've got to get your arms around what's wrong. What will this solve in the world? We are blind to vision of what is possible because we don't dig for the problem behind the problem. Oftentimes we you know, you bump onto something, it's like, ooh, get excited. And oftentimes a vision can deepen if you actually ask what's wrong or the why questions down a couple levels. So something doesn't work and you ask, well, why? And you might get a very, very surface answer. Well, what's the why? What's the why as you dig for the root cause? And sometimes this excavation leads to, you know, narrowing the vision and getting precise and getting specific. You know, we can save the world. Well, that's a pretty big problem. But okay, what's the strategy? save the world, broad. No, narrow this thing down. We're going to work with the girls. Okay, now I can start to, maybe that's a little different than working with the boys or whatever.
Excavate away the generalities and get to specifics. Tell you a story about Ag Salt here. I'm in partnership with two other partners, and we supply mixing salt and ice melt to customers. And 10 years ago, I got a call from Morton Salt. Now, Morton Salt is the big boy. You know, they're the giant in the industry. Them and Cargill and was a few others, but Morton is, you know, is the big boy. And I got a call from the president of the Perth Boy, New Jersey production plant out of the blue. And his name was Ed. And he said, we got a problem that we think you might be able to help us with. Well, I was wondering, first of all, well, you just started out like that. You might be able to help us. Well, how do you even know who I am? Well, I'm the little competitor. Okay, really little. I said, what's your problem? He said, well, I got a pile of mixing salt that I can't get sold into the market. Would you come up and take a look at it? And I said,
maybe. What's the pile? Well, he said, we got a problem. We got a lot of salt, and we just can't sell it. And we understand you know how to sell salt to the feed mills.
I said, how many tons are you talking about? He said, you just come up. It'll be worth your trip up. We're willing to make a deal. I said, all right. So I went up to Perth Boy, New Jersey. My business is in Gettysburg, so about 3 hours. Went up there and met Ed in his office. He said,
I want to show you this pal. Well, now, Morton, when they buy salt, they buy shiploads. Okay, we buy by the truckload, and we were, at that time, selling, 3,000-4,000 tons a year. And he takes me out behind the plant, and there's these two humongous pals, okay? And they both look like, well, they were shiploads. And the one was raw salt that had just come off the boat, about 25,000-30,000 tons. And then there was this other pal, and I just figured it was two pals, that two boatloads. He said, now let's go over this second pal. I said, what's this? Well, he said, this is this pal I was talking about. I said, what do you mean? No, he said, this is 25,000 tons that we couldn't get sold. It was all dry at one time, ready to go to market. Now it's all wet. We threw it out here in the pal. I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding. 25,000 tons is a $2 million problem. I did the math as we walked up this pile. I mean, it's a football field of salt. There was a road to the top. They took a loader up each day and dumped whatever they couldn't get sold. They had a 100-ton bin, and whatever couldn't get sold in a given day or week went out on this pile for the last 5 years. Now, Morton has a problem. We went to the top of that pile, and he goes, you think you could sell this for us? And I'm thinking, why can't they get this sold? I don't have any problem selling my salt. He was right. They had somehow heard that Ag Salt. Matter of fact, we had gotten a few of their customers. That's why we got their attention. You know? I didn't know if he was setting me up or what. I was overwhelmed. 25,000. We sell 3,000-4,000 a year. What am I going to do with 25,000? 6 years of salt for my little customer. At the top there, he said, and I said, well, let me ask you a few questions. I said, how did this all happen? What's the problem? Why can't you get this sold? Oh, he said, we're into ice melt. And he said, the fines are kind of waste, you know, he said, I really don't know why they don't want it. He said, maybe it's price. I said, but we make our profits over on ice melt. This is a pain. Well, I suddenly realized he didn't know the problem behind the problem. His problem was $2 million of loss. That's his pain. That's not his problem. That's his pain. He's answering to somebody up in some corporate office, and he's wanting to get this $2 million problem out of sight. I said, I don't know. He said, I went down and I scooped up some salt, and I was pushing around my hand. I was looking at salt, and suddenly it dawned on me why they can't sell this. And then the second thing dawned on me is, oh, he doesn't know what I know. And then I was afraid he was going to ask me a question that I didn't want to answer. It's like I knew in 5 seconds why he couldn't sell salt. Now, the salt was all wet because it was out in the rain, and that's not the reason you got to sell dry salt, but that wasn't the reason. His salt was so powdery fine that there's no way it's going to flow in a bulk bin. Now, if you know anything about Morton understands this problem. This is a logo from way back in the early 1900s. Morton salt, you all seen this on their little, barrel that sits in your wife's cupboard. Notice their tagline. That is a genius tagline. It's a pun. You got to get it. But do you get it? When it rains, it pours. Little girl with the umbrella is raining, and what's happening here?
Salt's pouring.
Yeah, her little salt shaker's pouring. Now, if you don't know this, salt is hydroscopic. It sucks moisture when it's raining, and then it sticks and it doesn't flow. That tagline is all about our salt flows, even when it's raining. Morton understands this is the problem in the industry to be solved. But they've forgotten it. At least Ed forgot it. He didn't know, apparently, that his salt wasn't flowing in his customers' bins. They didn't want it, regardless of the price. They'd come to Ag Salt. You know what our tagline is? The difference is flowability. That's our tagline. And we're talking about Morton. The difference is ours flows. And we sell our salt 25% above Morton's price. And they just buy it up. Because we've solved the problem. Well, I went home that day, and I didn't tell Mr. Morton what his problem was. I decided, you know what? The big boys got every leverage they have against the little guy. And if they can't figure this out, I'm not helping them. And I went home with a vision. Now, it wasn't my pain. It was Morton Payne I was paying attention to. And we built an expansion. And today we sell 15,000 tons a year. And Morton, I just Googled their pal. It's still sitting up there. Matter of fact, we were walking down off the pal. He said, I'll probably sell this to you for $10, $15 a ton. He said, we can't get rid of it. Township doesn't want it. It plugs up their truck spreaders. Nobody wants this dust. Well, so I just acted dumb, and I'll see what I could do. I took a sample home. Vision is born when you pay attention to the real problem of people's. And it doesn't have to be rocket science. You know? What's the problems in your life? Excavate them. Go to the bottom, and a vision can possibly be born. Innovate. Excavate and innovate. Without a vision, people perish, the scripture says. You could say it this way: without solutions to real problems, visions die. Sometimes we sense the problem, let's do something about it, and we think we have vision, and actually we stumble here on step two. We really don't have a solution. It's like, this is wrong, we got to correct it, let's go, and boom, we're on our face. We really don't have the solution yet, but we got a problem, a good problem that's worth fixing. To repeat Plato, necessity is the mother of innovation. Okay, they go together. Necessity, problem, leads to solution. This is old. Nothing new here.
Typically, it's easier to identify the problem than the solution. All right? A lot of visions die on the hill of innovation. This gets harder. So I've suggested three steps. First of all, brainstorm with knowledgeable, credible people. Oftentimes, someone has been up this hill before. Okay? You're probably not the first one to have to figure this problem out. When AF started, we went to MMA. Well, that's the old stewardship organization of the Mennonite Church. It's liberal, yes. Mennonite Mutual Aid, called Everence now, founded in the 50s. Our vision was a charitable side, and we got a lot of help from them. Matter of fact, we asked them, should we even start this? Are you serving the conservatives? Oh, they said, they don't trust us. It's wide open. Yes, do it. It's a problem. We can't reach them. And they helped. They helped. They were very helpful. When we increased the vision to the investment and loans, we reached out to the Weaverland. Mark Martin from Weaverland Financial Aid was immensely, they had already run their fund about 5 years, and he was a tremendous coach. Weekly calls with Mark Martin in those first years. Brainstorm. Secondly, a feasibility study. That's maybe too big of a word there, but you know, the ideas start to come together, and they gotta start to get a range. You gotta fit the ideas together. You gotta build a strategy. Take these ideas and from brainstorming and start to fit them together. Go from scattered ideas to strategy. Merle Burkholder did a fantastic job when we founded Open Hands. No longer part of Anabaptist Financial, we pushed it back out the door. They're independent. But he went to the SALT program, CAM SALT program. Open Hands and SALT's very similar. SALT was already running. And we compared notes. Should we start a second one? What's CAM's vision? And we discerned, yeah, you know, there's room for two here. We went to HOPE down in Lancaster, HOPE International. They were running savings groups. We counseled with them and different ones, similar microfinance organizations. And Merle put together a great study, brought it to the AF board. It made sense. He had a strategy to solve this problem, and he didn't reinvent the wheel. And it built the confidence to, yes, let's birth it. This has been tried and true. Lastly, articulate. Articulate, test, and refine the vision. So when birthing visions, you don't have the machine running yet. And it's hard to gain the confidence that this thing's going to live. You have to test it, and often, you know, they call it prototypes or whatever. It's not the real deal yet, but this is an important part of after you have the facts gathered and you got a strategy on paper that in some way you test it without launching it. And one of the tests is, can you articulate your vision? If you can't articulate it, you can't write it out, likely it's just got so many holes in that you can't articulate it. Habakkuk says it this way: write the vision, inscribe it on the tables. Though it tarries, wait for it. Sometimes a vision cannot be articulated because the full solution has not yet emerged. God called Moses to lead the people out. He tested it. It backfired. He waited how long?
40 years.
Now, most of us critique him and saying he wasted a little time there, you know, he lost his confidence. And well, some visions don't just come out of the chute. Like a racehorse. And there can be that pause. Habakkuk says, wait for it. Let it pause if it needs to pause. A pause is not necessarily the death of a vision. When God met him again then in the burning bush, he said, go, and he says what?
Not me.
Can't articulate. I can't talk. God said, fine, somebody's on the way. This vision
is ready to go to market. And Aaron shows up. The strength of a vision increases exponentially when the solution can be articulated in a compelling narrative. The vision has to take on a story feel to it. Every great story is conquering some problem with an emerging solution. To birth vision, a story has to be emerging, a story that God's on the move. When people can see a compelling solution emerging, they rally behind the vision. Thirdly, orchestrate the people. Now, again, this is not
orchestrating, or this is not managing the people. This is not even setting up the organization. Okay?
Cast the compelling vision plan that's typically, if you're going to be launching a nonprofit, it should be in writing because you're appealing to a constituent and a body of people. Cast the plan to an interested, vested group who has interest in solving this problem, potentially launching this organization. Let other people, as it were, hold the baby or the prototype and expect them to not like your baby quite like you have it created on paper. Expect you're going to need a compromise. They're going to shoot some things down. That's all part of this stage of bring people into and close to the vision and build buy-in. Okay? But in buy-in, some things typically go. The word buy-in assumes it's good for you and it's good for me. Buy. We'll buy it. But the things that don't work, that might be embedded in the vision, has got to go. Typically, this takes the form of, and these words mean different things to different people, but vision committee, steering committee, and then your board and organizational launch. There's different words people use, but vision committee typically are excavating the problem, you know, and it's just usually two or three. Steering committee, you add a few more, and their work is really developing the strategy. And then lastly, organizational launch or even the formation of the board. I want to tell a story in the last 10 minutes, and I'm telling kind of someone else's story here. Leland is with us in the group, and him and I have been on a great journey of birthing a vision. And so I almost wish he could tell a story, because I'll tell it different, because we come at it from different standpoints. But it illustrates these three movements of excavating the problem, innovating a solution, and orchestrating the people. How many of you are aware of Anabaptist Savings and Loans? Okay, just a couple, because the baby's really not born yet, okay? But it's the journey. So just the last 10 minutes, just tell a story, and maybe Leland can to add the filler content. So 3 years ago, Roman Miller, Roman is from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and him and I served on a seminar committee out in Goshen, so we knew each other a bit. Gave me a call and he said, "Merrill," he said, "I'd like to meet with you to talk about a vision." I said, "Well, you know, I've got a couple minutes. Go ahead." Nah, he said, "We're not talking across the phone. This is too important. I've got to be face-to-face." Paul likes to be face-to-face when you're talking about important things. And Rome is the same way. He said, "No." He said, I want your full attention. No phone." Oh, I said, "You got my attention there." So we met at Grove City. He was coming in from 80 there, and I lived north of Pittsburgh there. We met at Beans and Broad in Grove City. And Roman spilled out his vision. Now, Roman's vision, Roman grew up, his first 26 years was in Paraguay. He's 50-some now, and always had interest in missions. His whole life is around missions and involved in various missions. I can't quite describe all the different, lots of experience,
Roman knew the problem he was talking about. And here's how he framed it. He said, Merle, we've done mission for 50 years, but we haven't taken the grace of economics to South America. He was representing South America. He was in different countries down there. He said, we've done missions without bringing what we know about economics. We teach them to be content in their poverty. Well, that's okay. But he said, we don't bring... He said the missionaries went and started mission, not the entrepreneurs. And he said, this is a 50-year-old problem. And he said, this needs solved. But he said, no one believes me we can solve it. I said, well, who'd you talk to? He starts lifting off the missions down there. You know, he had done his homework. Missions in South America. And went through a list and finally said, and he said, I even talked to Gary Miller from SALT. And what did he say? He said, I don't have time. I don't have time. Well, when I left Grove City, you know who I gave a call? I gave a call to Gary Miller. I said, Gary, now tell me the truth. I understand you're busy, but what do you think of Roman Miller's vision? And you know what he said? Oh, Merle, don't make me say it. I said, I just sat with Roman, and he said you didn't give him the time of day. What do you see in his vision? He said, it's full of holes. It's full of holes. He wasn't being mean. All he was saying is, Roman has a grip on the problem, but this solution's a tough one. And there's no way Roman alone is going to get this figured out. This problem is big. 50 years old, and no solution in sight. And as I talked to Roman that day, I became aware this man is in stage one, and there's a wall. The solution is not evident. But Roman struck me as a Moses. Okay? And he was talking to an Aaron that didn't have time. That's just like Gary. I didn't have time. Paul didn't take my place yet. That was back when, whew. But you know what Roman said? He said, Merle, this vision is going to die at this table. You're the last guy I'm talking to. I've talked for years about this. The problem's too big. I'm willing to accept it. That's like, I said, Roman, have you tried to write out this thing? No, he said, I got Amish roots. I can't write, he said. I don't know how to write. I can barely talk English. Roman's great. And so it was all verbal. Nothing was committed to print. Not even the problem. But he could talk for hours and he could map out the problem. I said, all right, Roman. I said, I'll give you 20 hours. I'm not doing what Gary did to you. I'm giving you 20 hours. And I said, you talk and I'll write. And so the next couple weeks, we got on the phone. I designated 20 hours, and I can write. If Paul helps, if Paul edits, I can write. As I got it on paper. Because if you get the vision on paper, or at least the problem, we didn't have a solution yet. Guess what? People can interact with it at another whole level. So we did this little vision paper, problem paper, excuse me.
Problem
paper without much of a solution. Of course, I could understand the American, North America. His vision was we got to get capital and teaching down to South America. The savings group model is not what they need. They need capital. North America, Mennonites have all kind of capital. There's no channel to get it down there. And he knew I knew something about the North American Mennonite capital. Yeah. We got a little few dollars there floating around. He said, we need an AF down there. And we need them two to work together. Whew. Big vision. We tried to put it on paper. All kind of holes in it, like Gary said. But Gary said, when I called him, going back to my call with Gary, I said, Gary, will you let me call you and talk to you about this vision? He said, you can call me, but he said, you know, when I'm traveling, I'll pick up the phone. Anyhow, so we put it out in paper, we got it out to a few key people, sent it to Levin and others. And we couldn't get any traction. There was holes all through that thing. There was just questions. Oh my goodness! I knew nothing about South America, you know. And we were even struggling. Well, how are we going to do it up here? And we finally bumped into the idea of credit investors because it's risky to invest. You know, 5 minutes. Yeah, invest. You know, down South America, and it's going to have to be a different platform than AF. But we figured all that out. We even went to Hope International, the microfinance model, and. But they weren't doing investors. They were using charitable funds to fund entrepreneurship around the world, and we wanted to use investors. Anyways, it was a. But we finally got to a point, realizing Roman and I that, you know what, we can't figure this out. Particularly the South American side of it. What are the entities we need down there? Who's down there? What if we need lawyers? What's their social. Security exchange laws. It was just like Roman didn't know. He had done a couple little deals down there, but anyhow, here's where Leland comes into play. We had interacted with Leland, and by the way, Leland's a busy man too. And that was Leland's answer. I'm too busy, Merle. But I started pushing on Leland like Roman pushed on me. But Leland. You grew up in Costa Rica. You've got that 20, 30 years down there. You're doing coffee down there in these countries. You have knowledge that might help us. Well, Leland considered it for a month, and he come back, and he said, you know what? God's calling me. My whole life is about helping people, and particularly South America. And Leland joined the vision, and we had a breakthrough. Leland is gifted with a strategic mind and had connections to attorneys and accountants. And him and Roman went to a conference down there on microfinance, and we started to learn, well, what's it going to take on the South American side? So we formed a vision committee, the three of us, and developed and filled in those holes in my paper that I wrote. And 2 years ago, yesterday, we brought it to the third level, to a broader group of people. We brought it to, we assembled the missionaries from Guatemala and Honduras, different ones, over in Africa. We had a public meeting. The three of us presented, is this vision doable? Is it possible? And it was kind of a tough meeting. A couple of them sat there and said, man, you've got to get, do you realize that they're going to walk off with your assets down there? And I mean, it's not like up here. And they were telling some horror stories of, yeah, it's not as secure down there. You sure the investors will be okay with how risky this is? And it was a good meeting. They didn't buy in just like that. There was pause and, you know, and be careful with money, and you could ruin those poor people, and we know all that. Money can hurt, and oh my, it was a great meeting. We had some information to fill in a few more holes, didn't we, Leland? But that's the part of birthing a good vision. The right people were in the room, and they offered caution, and it got adjusted, and it changed. Well, the baby isn't born yet, 2 years later, but I'm telling you, I think it's due any day. The board, they formed a steering committee after that meeting. It took a couple months, I didn't join the steering committee. I was too busy. But they pulled me in along the way, and it's just been a great journey of this vision, a big one, that could be a huge blessing internationally around the world. Come in behind the savings group. Those of you understand the savings group, where they teach them the finance. They don't give them the money, except each other's money. We've got a vision to send money around the world and teaching that's piling up here. And we don't need it nearly as bad as they do. And it's good to be on the team with Leland and Roman, and their board's going to reorganize in a month or two and start operation. So I just wanted to share that story of there's a story. That's what it looks like. And it's hard, but gets me out of bed in the morning. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.